Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonorable podcast, screaming into your internet's echo chamber one painful episode at a time. My name's Jimmy and I voted to leave the EU in 2016.
And my name's Jazza, and Anna Soubry, the arch Ramona from the Conservative Party, is quickly becoming my spirit animal.
What has Soubs done to win this accolade?
Oh, she's just lovely, isn't she? I listened to, she did an interview with Nick Robinson on his podcast this week, and I've just...
Are you on commission from that podcast?
I really am. It's the best thing in my podcast, in my podcatcher at the moment. Apart from this very podcast, obviously.
I mean, I find his kind of chummy interviewing style quite grating, to be honest with you.
I really like it. I want to be interviewed by him just so that I can kind of be buttered up.
I don't know.
And
it's all like
blinding. Oh, here's a statistic that proves you're wrong. That's what I want.
He's got quite an annoying sort of delivery though, and it's all kind of trying to make Westminster bubble jokes, which even I find quite annoying.
Yeah, he did have a part in this particular interview where he's describing what it means when someone says, oh, so-and-so had a rolled-up newspaper down his pants, and apparently, like, it's a public school reference. And he's like, obviously, I didn't go to that kind of a school, but I know exactly what this reference means.
Right, yeah.
Man of the people, but actually I understand absolutely everything that the posh people are talking about, so.
I mean, I went to private school, and I don't understand the newspaper reference.
So. I think we both went to private school, Jimmy, after caning became, like, you know, normal.
Not normal.
Was that? Was became bad. Not normal. Yes, yeah.
Okay. So what was it that Soubry said in the interview that enamoured you of her?
Oh, she just wants to stop Brexit.
Is she fully...
It's a low bar.
She's fully stopping Brexit at this point.
So the next step is very much let's stop it in Parliament and then go from there, take it to the people, all of that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. I mean, this actually allows us to seek effortlessly into the first topic that we'll be discussing, which is the Renew Britain or Renew Party that has just launched in a wave of publicity. It seems like all of the different news outlets actually covered this party, and I think the angle we're going to be taking on it is it's not entirely
why
it's not obvious why, like, I suppose it's the there's been lots and lots of what I'm going to charitably call Remainer parties, or like second referendum parties, that have been proposed and gone through the early stages of being set up, but this one appears not only to have registered with the Electoral Commission but also managed to make it to a launch conference, which is impressive. But then they're not like former politicians, which would make it more of a news story. I mean, if like Ken Clark
defected.
All of the people
who are like the front of the party, they all have backgrounds in like media and NGOs and the civil service. So
yeah,
they're as close to politicians as you can get without being a politician.
Yeah, I think the main lady was like a comms person for the UN at one point.
Yeah, and was a journalist at CNN.
Yes, yeah.
These people are the literal embodiment of liberal metropolitan elites.
Yeah, they are. So I think we'll be discussing that in further depth. For the second topic, Jazzy, you wanted to discuss the indictments of 13 Russian officials in the US.
Yeah, I think that this was actually really... It was about a week ago now, but I think this is really interesting because it kind of puts into perspective the scope of how much Russians were actually involved in the US election, and how it goes beyond the tropes that we tend to be talking about a lot since Trump got in, specifically surrounding like their use of social media, and it's all like Russian troll farms who got Trump elected. Whereas actually there was quite a lot of like real life espionage. Like Russians infiltrated the United States and did on the ground kind of like organizing and stuff like that to just try and fuck shit up. And also, I wanted us to have a little chat and see. Well, and talk about the evidence that exists for similar kind of stuff happening in the Brexit vote.
You constantly complain that we talk all the time about Brexit, and yet it seems that you're the chief architect of any Brexit discussion that takes place.
I'm a masochist.
Okay, that's fine. I'm happy to discuss, you know, the nasty foreign people who influenced various elections. That's fine.
Jimmy, you don't know what I'm going to say about nasty foreign people supposedly affecting the Brexit vote, do you? Stop assuming.
Okay, I wait with bated breath. And for the last topic, we are going to be discussing this survey that I found, which I found it entertaining. It should be said the context of this, I think, is that Emmanuel Macron, the French president, suggested that he would bring back a month's worth of national service for all of the young people.
I believe it was actually 6 months, was it not?
I read 1 month.
Okay.
But there was apparently one of his cabinet ministers then said it wouldn't be compulsory, and Macron said it would be compulsory. So obviously they're ironing out some of the details here. So this is from this is via Britain Elects, the Twitter like polling aggregator, and it's originally from YouGov from the 15th of February. On bringing back compulsory military service for young people, 48% of British people support it, and 36% of British people oppose it, and the rest are presumably don't knows. The other interesting thing they've pulled out is that among 18 to 24 year olds, 62% oppose it and only 10% support it. And among the 65 pluses, 74% support it and 18% oppose it.
Hilarious that the people who are not going to be affected by such a policy want the policy to go ahead. It's almost like we have a generational chasm politically in this country.
Almost, yeah. So we will be talking about that after the music and various other things.
Doob 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 doob.
This is your regular reminder that if you enjoy the podcast and want to contribute some money towards the running costs of it, you can sign up to our Patreon page. If you go to patreon.com/rightdishonorable, you'll see the various tiers of rewards that we have on offer, including mugs, which are still due to be sent out, and badges, among other things. As always, we'd like to give a shout out to Ollie McGregor, Agatha Hoder, Gemma Cumming, Matt, Dominique Flood, and one of our new patrons, John O. Thanks very much for your support. Jazza, how happy were you when you read the news that Renew was going to be launching and seeking to overturn Brexit and fix all of Britain's political problems?
So I am aware that in the past I have been probably overly zealous and excited about the prospect of there being a new centrist party, and I feel like I've been taken down the garden path. Is that a phrase?
That is a phrase. Yeah.
Great. I feel like I've been taken down that path too many times, and I've been burned, Jimmy. My trust levels are so low that I'm just like, oh God, another one. Also, it's not. I don't know what it is about Renew, but it just seems particularly helpless, and I don't understand how they think that this is going to be able to make any kind of a dent at all. Especially without any kind of the backing that they would need, which would be within Westminster and would need to come from disillusioned members of Parliament who are currently in Parliament. I found it all very confusing. It was really I found it very funny because James O'Brien was on the Romaniacs podcast And he apparently has been asked into meetings with a lot of people who have like the funding to create this kind of an anti-Brexit party, because James O'Brien from LBC is very much like, he's one of my people.
And, I think that's a bit uncharitable. He's much worse than you.
He is worse than me, but also I do want to be him. And he was like, he's been approached by so many of these kinds of organizations looking to start a new party that he can't even remember if Renew approached him.
So Renew, like, as we kind of said in the intro, it's kind of slightly unclear where they're coming from in terms of their background. They've like the four main people, there's three principals and one who's the founder, all stood as independent candidates in the 2017 election as independents. And there's two journalists / public relations type people in there. There's a like fintech startup consultant, I think he brands himself as. But the whole ethos is like they're consciously trying to emulate Emmanuel Macron's En Marche movement, which deliberately tried to recruit people from outside of politics in order to actually create a new kind of party. Obviously,
and it's now the largest party in Paris.
Yeah. I mean, in Paris or in France?
Paris is in the seat of government.
Oh, right. Okay. But also, like, eventually they ended up recruiting, in the case of En Marche, they ended up recruiting politicians from other parties. And this is something that James Clark, who's one of the main guys in Renew, discussed in an interview with Core Politics, that would be something that they'd look into further down the line. I know it's sort of the point, but it also seems pretty futile from my point of view to form a political party when you have no local roots in any of the constituencies, and you're going to have to build that up from scratch, which is going to take far longer than the time frame that they have the opportunity to overturn Brexit in.
To their credit, they are getting local people to run in local seats.
Yes.
Although I have taken a look at their candidates page, and it is, I know you're gonna like this, Jimmy, it is a load of like middle-aged or older than middle-aged white men and some women.
I mean, one thing that struck me is that they've got when I checked, at least they had like 19 candidates, not including the main people organizing it. And
yeah, there's 650 constituencies in the UK,
650, so. But also of the candidates that have been announced, I think something like a dozen of them are based in London.
Yeah,
which and also, if you look at the website, one of the main pieces of advertising was it was a picture of nine diverse people, and it doesn't look like Britain.
None of them are candidates.
None of those people are candidates. It doesn't look like Britain, that thing. It looks like London, which is fair enough. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But as you said, these are the general impression you get when like listening to these people is they are the face of the liberal metropolitan elite, albeit the liberal metropolitan elite that legitimately has few or at least only hidden connections to actual political power.
I don't understand why this group of people hasn't just joined the Lib Dems, because in an interview with Core Politics that James Clark, one of the principals of Renew, had, his main grievance with the Lib Dems seems to be Vince Cable and how he was boring. And I'm like, okay, well, join the Lib Dems and then maybe run as the leader, or maybe vote for somebody who's more interesting.
Well, also, James Clark in the interview, stepping on dangerous territory here, because I'm definitely not the most charismatic person myself, but he is also he's also quite boring. He's at least as boring as Vince Cable, in my subjective opinion.
Vince Cable, I think, is like, I just think Vince is lovely. He's at least nice.
So the thing that we were both asking, we mentioned it in the intro to this, is why is it that these guys have got attention? Because it's not even as though they've managed to get a big name defection like someone like Chukwuemeka or Ken Clark from the Tories. Like somebody, if
Anna Soubry, my new spirit animal.
Or Anna Soubry, like any of the big kind of outspoken Remain campaigners in Parliament could have actually joined this party, and it would have been a major story. Like even if it came to nothing and it ended up failing like the Social Democrats Democratic Party did back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already said privately to you why I think this is, but why do you think they've managed to get attention?
They are technically, I believe, the first new party to actually register with the Electoral Commission.
You mean the first Remain party?
Yes, yeah. Like the first one that is like, we're going to overturn Brexit, we're a new party, and we're taking the official steps to do it, rather than it just kind of being some pontificating on Twitter at 3 o'clock in the morning by some randoms. Also, like we have talked about this off air, it has to be because they have connections.
Yeah,
it has to be because they know the right people, and they are from PR backgrounds. Because otherwise, like, just from the get go, this whole project seems like a fart in a hurricane. it feels like they are. They don't talk about reforming the voting system, which is the only way that they are going to be able to, and a new party really is ever going to be able to make any kind of a headway in an election system like the United Kingdom. Even the every party, apart from the main two, support some kind of proportionate representation, and this hasn't been part of their narrative whatsoever. They don't really seem to have many policies other than stop Brexit.
Oh, I don't know that that's true. So one of the things that struck me in the interviews with the kind of the main people involved in this was all around the opening press conferences, when they talked about Brexit, they actually made very little reference to the EU itself. They talked about tangential things like inequality and sort of financial stagnation since the crash.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, personally, there is obviously some truth to that, but the idea that the Brexit vote was not at all related to a deep-seated, at least disinterest in the EU, or at least alienation from the EU, is just wrong, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, even people who voted Remain, or significant numbers at least, were not necessarily attracted to the EU in the way someone like you is. They thought they were kind of indifferent to the EU, but they thought that it made sense to remain, which is
is a
perfectly reasonable opinion. But the sort of stuff they talk about on their website, Renew, is stuff like, I mean, they mention house building, minimum wage, universal basic income, which is quite a controversial policy, let's say.
Well, we'll do universal basic income at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it's sort of like
we'll be able to be YouTubers.
You wish. But it's sort of like general kind of bromar. It's pointing out obvious sources of discontent and then vaguely suggesting some kind of boilerplate solutions to it. But it there's nothing particularly special in their platform other than the anti-Brexit angle, I don't think.
What I find quite interesting as well is that at least the leadership and the policies that they talk about sounds and feels very... Like, when I was first researching them, they sound like they are made specifically for Remainer Tories. That was kind of like the vibe I was getting, not just off of the candidates, but also the kind of issues that they were talking about. But actually, apparently, according to their leadership, 40% of the people that have joined up to Renew are from Labour. With the rest kind of being split evenly between the Conservatives and the Lib Dems, which I find curious, because this doesn't feel like this feels like a slightly, if you take away Brexit, it feels like a slightly right of centre ish. like slightly more right than the Lib Dems kind of angly.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I wonder slightly if the main people they're actually pulling from Labour are actually, aside from people who are opposed to Brexit, disillusioned former Blairites or people who liked Tony Blair and are generally more unhappy with how Labour have gone. Because there is something that doesn't quite tally there, even if you accept that a lot of Labour members are unhappy with how Corbyn has handled Brexit. Also, from my point of view, it seems as like a better use of your time, and this is something that Nick Clegg said in his How to Stop Brexit book, to convince Labour to oppose Brexit rather than form a new party.
So, first of all, Jimmy, Sir Nick Clegg. and this is the thing that I also don't really understand, is these people... Well, like, to be honest, they don't really come across as hugely passionate either. But they would probably be better, their time would be better spent and their resources better spent in the already existing campaign groups like Open Britain or like those kinds of organizations, or like infiltrating like the Conservatives and making sure that. Infiltrating is probably not the correct word, but changing internal policies in those parties, rather than creating a new party that's probably going to get like a couple of thousand votes in each constituency at most, and could also be a problem in splitting the vote whenever there's a marginal constituency.
Yeah, I mean one thing that. Actually, I'd kind of say, if kind of leading on from that, if you wanted to stop Brexit, you'd actually want to convince enough Tory MPs who are sympathetic to you to rebel against the Tory government, while simultaneously working on Labour to change their overall stance. And actually, to do that, I don't really think you necessarily want an open campaign. I think you want something far more covert and sneaky, basically.
Yeah, and in order to do this as well, in order to reverse Brexit, they'd have to get into Parliament, and the next Parliament, well, the next parliamentary election is scheduled for 2022, when we'll be out of the customs union by then. Well, that's what Theresa thinks anyway.
Well, currently it's a 2-year transition period from 2019 that's being proposed.
More or less, but also Didn't she say this week that it was kind of going to be extendable indefinitely?
I don't know if she said that, but it's definitely possible.
So they have a click to become a candidate button on their website. Jimmy, have you clicked it yet? Are you going to be a candidate?
I clicked it to see what happened, and I did consider putting in fake details just to see what the process is like. I'm expecting.
Well, no need, Jimmy, because I.
You did.
Yes.
And what happened?
You get sent like a survey, and I'm genuinely going to go through this process because partially because I think it will make good content, but also because I find I want to see if there actually is any kind of a life inside this party beyond just kind of like the top-down media blitz that happened this week. Because I'm unconvinced, but we'll see.
Yeah, it does.
I'll keep you in the loop as I become a candidate for Oxford West.
This is how you inadvertently end up leading the Renew campaign.
I mean, I'm down. I have the ego for it.
What have I started? speaking of sort of illegal subterfuge, do you want to talk about Russia and Trump and indictments?
What a segue. So, Mueller is in charge of an investigation at the moment to try and determine whether or not there has been collusion from the Russian side, ultimately basically to try and figure out whether or not Trump was helped and the election in 2016 against Hillary Clinton was unfairly influenced. Kind of affected
so that's Robert Mueller, who's a former CIA director, is that
correct?
Right,
yes. And so the first indictments have happened. So 13 Russian nationals have been arrested over interference with the 2016 election. It was... it's somewhat confusing whether how much and to what extent this actually extends to Trump and the Trump campaign, even though we have had a couple of resignations from former runners of the campaign on Trump's side, although they aren't tied to these particular Russians. But what I thought was really, really interesting was less the information that we got from the release about this indictment seemed to be more, it was less about getting Trump elected and more about just fucking shit up. So the Russians engaged in operations primarily intended to affect Hillary Clinton in a negative way, but also other candidates on the Republican side like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, and they wanted to support Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump because they were the most destabilizing candidates. And there's kind of like this idea that it was a pro-Trumpian agenda, but actually they just wanted to see the U.S. flounder and stumble a little bit. And I think it's interesting that they were equally trying to bolster the Bernie Sanders side, which must be a little bit awkward for a lot of Bernie bros that we know.
You're not particularly fond of Bernie bros, are you?
I think they are the worst.
The worst?
Yeah, the worst.
Worse than Trumpkins?
I don't know, at least like they kind of know they're evil.
I'm not sure they do.
Whereas the Bernie bros are kind of like, oh yeah, it's very like white college boy savior kind of thing.
Is this kind of the brocialist's complaint?
Yeah, and there's lots of toxic masculinity flying around in those kind of camps, and I'm just not about it. It's not my thing.
Right, but presumably you think Bernie Sanders would have made a better president than Trump, though.
I think that is a very low bar.
I think you're trying to avoid saying yes.
Well, no, yes, Bernie Sanders would have been a better president, I guess. I mean, for the world, than Donald Trump. I agree.
Do you think, more genuinely, that it does reflect badly on Bernie Sanders that he was effectively supported by the Russians?
Well, so the kind of the point is he was... I think we should probably stop short of saying that he was supported by the Russians. But he was a very destabilizing candidate. And that's why a load of especially young people really liked him, because he was going to change things. He was going to improve healthcare after Obamacare. He was going to... he was like anti-nuclear and... like pro-socialist and all of those kinds of things, and was really going to like change things in the United States had he become the president. And Donald Trump was also like another change candidate, and both of them kind of appeal. There was a lot of talk in 2016 of these people who were supporting Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries, and then ended up, rather than voting for Hillary in the final runoff, ended up voting for Donald Trump because, frankly, they just wanted like they were voting for a change candidate. And so that's obviously like they just wanted the US to probably go through a bit of an existential crisis a little bit.
It does kind of feed into the whole anti-establishment narrative that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have been kind of bundled together, as you say, not supported directly by the Russians, but supported in as much as they disturbed the general ecosystem or whatever. They destabilize things in that way.
Yeah, they challenge the infrastructure around them that's meant to provide the stability that allows somewhere like the United States to be a global power.
Do you not think that will make it very easy for kind of detractors of Mueller to say, oh, look, it's not just Donald Trump that he's that's kind of caught up in this. It's also Bernie Sanders. This is just the establishment taking care of itself.
Maybe. I don't think anybody's been saying that, though, have they?
I don't know. I'm speculating here.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting. It's an interesting, like, possible take on this, but also that's kind of Robert Mueller's job. His job is to, like, even when he was like an equivalent of a civil servant. When he was in the CIA, he's there to protect the kind of like sovereignty and the stability of the United States. Mm. And that is kind of the whole point of this as well, like protecting the stability and sovereignty of the United States and making sure that foreign actors aren't affecting their elections.
I mean, isn't it probably the case that Russians, you know, this might be overly cynical of me, but Russians have probably been interfering in American politics, even at this level, pretty much since the end of the Cold War? Wouldn't you say that's true, or probable at least?
Yes, certainly. And we do know this. Like, even these, the operatives who were arrested last week, they were... they'd been here since like 2014. They'd been in the US since 2014 before Trump was a candidate. And he relished tweeting that out. No collusion was his conclusion. He's so insightful. What I thought was really, really interesting about them, though, is that they were just there to use whatever tools available to them and whatever was necessary. And I think that we see 2016 as a particularly special election because it was the first time that social media was used for like nefarious means, but it doesn't look like that was necessarily a priority, at least for these individuals. A lot of their efforts apparently went into recruiting like pro-Trumpian supporters to do like media gimmicks, like people dressing up as Hillary Clinton in prison outfits, and organizing events on Facebook that then actual people would go to, but they'd be the ones instigating these kind of like pro-Trump events. And even apparently there's evidence of these Russian individuals paying people to attend Trump events, which is wonderfully ironic, because that's what a lot of the American right has been saying about mass protests from the left for a very long time.
I mean, I've sort of read some of the news stories of this. What exactly have they been charged with, like, other than, I know they're accused of espionage in broad terms, but is it actually illegal for, I mean, obviously it is illegal for them to do some of the things they've done, but for a Russian to go and organize campaign activity, surely that in and of itself isn't illegal?
So it will be a variety of things. It's because it's a foreign actor who is trying to affect an election, and it's a foreign actor who is in the United States on false pretenses.
Right, okay. You said you wanted to link this back to Brexit in some way. So what is the link?
Oh, watch me do it. There's like some evidence in the United States, especially from like the social media angle, that there has been money pumped into like Facebook ads specifically, as well as like Twitter accounts. One particular organization, the Internet Research Agency, which was based in Russia, apparently spent over $100,000 on about 3,000 Facebook adverts. And Facebook are trying to play this down an awful lot, like understandably. And I think that there perhaps is an argument for these kinds of ads and these kind of paid for efforts being drops in the water, really, in kind of like the wider kind of movement of like Trump and also of Brexit. Somebody did like some, I think it was actually Facebook, were trying to calm people down when a lot of this information came out about the Internet Research Agency in Russia, and they found out that like 3 adverts had been paid for around Brexit by that particular agency. But the thing is, we still don't like it's impossible for us to know right now, or we don't yet know how much collusion there has been on like these kinds of platforms like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube.
When you say collusion, what do you mean?
Hoping to sway voters' opinions.
That's not collusion.
That's not collusion. You're correct.
It's more influencing. Sure.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think it is important for us to say, though, like some initial reports that have come out of my institution actually have found that Russian Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts didn't really account for a huge amount of the conversations that were happening on their respective platforms, and only like a tiny proportion of YouTube content surrounding Brexit was of clear like Russian origin. It is possible that these particular accounts would have ended up having disproportionate influence, but I think that I think it's actually a bit of a distraction if we focus on the Russians hacking the election too much, because at the end of the day, people voted for Brexit and Trump because they were very unhappy with the status quo and because of legitimate reasons. I mean, you, Jimmy, are an example of this.
Should it actually be illegal for, say, the government of one country? I know the Russian government didn't do it directly. They did it through third parties that were under their control. But should it be illegal for them to buy advertising to influence another election?
It's not kosher, is it?
It's not great, but then at the same
time...
But
also, we've been trying to influence foreign elections forever.
America's a particularly...
So maybe people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Ironic example in this respect, because America is infamous for... invading countries that have political systems or political leaders that are not in line with their wishes.
Yeah, or assassinating half of South America's leaders.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's various examples you could point to. And that, I guess, is sort of whataboutery in a sense. But
I think that's exactly what whataboutery is. I think that the use of whataboutery was used specifically for those examples. that's how the word became a thing.
I mean, irrespective of whether it should be illegal, it's probably the case that Twitter and Facebook and so on should be putting measures in place in order to block these kind of purchases, you know, whether they be from the Russians or from the American government.
Yeah, there really does, especially in the UK, where there are such strict advertising restrictions on how money is spent and where it is spent and by whom, and even in like political and with political advertising and endorsements and all of those kinds of things, it is equally like really necessary that there has to be some kind of legislation that extends to digital platforms. But also, it's just so fucking hard. Like it's difficult to track this kind of stuff.
Well, a lot of these organizations are deliberately disguised so that it appears as though they have no link to the originator of the money.
Yeah, exactly, as well.
Okay, is there anything further you want to pick out of this story?
No, do you want to talk about the military now?
I do. I mean, this I feel like I'm always having to defend my topic choices, particularly at the end of this podcast. But we've never discussed military service.
Haven't we?
I don't think so.
Interesting. Look at us.
I can't recall it anyway. And I think it's an interesting poll. So this was YouGov's poll earlier in February. The question was something like, do you think we should bring back compulsory military service for young people? And 48% said yes, and 36% said no.
Do you think that the young'uns are snowflakes and they need to be toughened up?
Do you think that was the first question on the survey?
Yes, yeah. I think maybe because of balance, they had to slightly change the wording.
Maybe, yeah. So, I mean, it's been pointed out that it's mostly the older people who are driving this. There is almost no appetite among young people to bring back compulsory military service. Are you in favour of military service? Compulsory or otherwise?
Do you think I'm in favour of it? What do you think?
I would say no, but I imagine that you can kind of, you're probably like slightly sympathetic to the arguments, I would say. Like, you wouldn't dismiss them completely out of hand.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of into it.
But you're not in favour ultimately, I'm guessing.
I'm okay with it. And I think that this does have a lot to do with the fact that I've done like combined cadet force at school,
right?
And have been around like naval and army stuff for a lot of my life, and I see it do a lot of good. And I think that it provides a good kind of like outlet and structure to people who otherwise don't have any. And it also, I know some Swiss people, and the way that they talk about military service, because they still have to do it. And also, like, some Korean friends of mine, they're like, oh, it's just it's an experience that absolutely everyone in the country has to go through. And therefore, you kind of have this shared trauma. And that provides kind of like a shared camaraderie, and you'll meet people from like all over your country, and you have more of an opportunity to travel and all those kinds of things. And I think that Macron's actually quite smart to bring it in, because it kind of plays to the nationalist base that didn't necessarily vote for him. And also, potentially could end up being valuable in like bringing the country back together, because there is a lot of ghettoization and there is a lot of like cultural kind of like separation, especially with North African communities in France. And perhaps something like this would help to bring people back together. Also, interestingly, France only stopped having compulsory military service in 2001. So it's not been that long that they haven't had it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of countries in Europe had it sort of quite late into the 20th century.
We finished in 1960.
Yeah, I mean, Britain doesn't have, like, even throughout history, we don't have a long record of conscription, because we were always like dominated by the navy rather than the army.
We've got a moat, haven't we?
We do have a moat. And actually, British people and the Americans, to a certain degree, are sort of have a history of suspicion around standing armies as well, which is kind of linked together. But I'm still not really. I can see that the benefits are actually quite interesting. I mean, in addition to the ones you mentioned about kind of bringing kind of social cohesion as well, because you literally throw everybody from every different background into the into a pot, basically, and they have to meet and work and learn to empathize with one another. In the case of Israel, which obviously has the Israeli Defense Force, and I think every man and woman has to do 2 or 3 years service or something.
I think they're the only one that has men and women conscripted.
It's usually just men.
Yes, like South Korea has the most extensive one, as does Taiwan actually, and it's only guys that get called up there.
Yeah. So in the case of Israel, there are a couple of pieces I was reading, which suggested that the kind of technical training that the kind of best and brightest gets when they join up the Israeli Defense Force is very much linked to the country's very good IT sector, and Israel actually has loads of cybersecurity companies as well. So there's kind of, I mean, in the same way, like if the government invests in a lot of training in a particular skill, it ends up being a big boon to that sector, and you can found. In certain fields, obviously, once you get ahead, it's very easy to maintain that lead.
Yeah,
it can be good for that reason.
Yeah, and also it can provide free training, especially vocational training for a lot of people. So I know people who've ended up being engineers and physiotherapists and those kinds of like practical had practical qualifications off of the back of work that they've done in the military.
I think also the...
although I'm not sure the UK needs more physiotherapists. I'm not sure that's one of the that's one of the places where we're lacking.
Well, in relation to the physiotherapy thing, I think the way the Finns do national service, that there's actually more civil kind of options that you could do. And it's, some people have suggested that you could kind of have, if you didn't want to join, say, the army or the navy or whatever, you could join a kind of civilian NHS service or whatever.
You could do health work, people work in care and that kind of stuff. We had it for my school as well, so we all had to either do an army or a military thing, or all of the people who weren't athletic in any way, shape, or form went to the old folks' home and like read to grandparents and stuff.
Yeah, we had a community service. Thing every week. So I don't know if you have you answered this directly. Are you actually genuinely in favour of this? If there was, say, a referendum, controversial on...
Oh, for goodness sake, not another one.
Okay, if you're an MP then, and there was a bill before you and it was a free vote, and it was like, we're going to bring back, say, 2 years of compulsory national service that can include just military or... include those civilian functions as well. Would you vote in favour of it?
2 years is too long.
How long would you do it for?
I haven't said that I would do it for.
If you were to do it.
So many hypotheticals.
Are you in favour of it in any form, I guess?
I think that there is potentially a huge amount of value to people having military training. I think that we should have it as an option for a lot of people. I'm not sure how I feel about it being compulsory.
Yeah, I think... but then you could say it already is an option in the sense that if you want to go and join the army...
Yeah, you can join the army.
So maybe we don't need to do anything. But maybe it should be more advertised as an actual option then. I don't know.
So perhaps having something... maybe I'm tying it nostalgically to my own experience, but having it as something that is more present in schools across the country, and perhaps having those kinds of like practical trainings that is tied to jobs, not just in the military, but that are tied in jobs to the military, would be a really good thing. Maybe you could have like regional outreach centres that do tours of schools every once in a while, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the when I used to write about IT security, you'd end up meeting a lot of former soldiers that had actually been sort of obviously rejoined or joined the private sector, having done a tour of duty or whatever. And obviously, America kind of takes veterans affairs far more seriously than we do.
Apparently, we treat our veterans a lot better, though. So
do we? Okay.
Yeah, they have much higher rates of homelessness than we do, even though our veteran homeless rate is still very high.
Yeah, I mean it only in the sense that...
we had healthcare. But yes, go on, sorry.
There seem to be a lot more deliberate efforts to actually kind of remarket soldiers' skills once they've actually left, and there seems to be more of a culture around that, at least from a superficial perspective.
Interesting. Oh, what do you think, Jimmy? You've just asked me questions. Do you think we should have military service? And which service would you join?
I don't think I would join. I'm not dispositionally suited to the military. In any form. I think most of my friends and family would confirm that. But I mean, I kind of think it's fine as it is. Like, you can join the military, but it is... One thing that struck me is that a lot of the benefits that people claim about military service in terms of kind of building you up as an individual and cementing and getting people from different backgrounds introduced to one another and so on, it's actually a lot of the same benefits that people claim that a liberal arts education provides you with. It turns you into a well-rounded individual. Obviously...
Yeah, but not everybody wants to do a liberal arts degree.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know, it's something about it doesn't, I think, sit very well with like the modern ethos of Britain as a non-militaristic country, which I you know, there's, I guess, is a problem in the sense that you ultimately need a military and a defence force, and you know, major countries need to be able to carry out military operations. And I don't necessarily feel very good about the... There's a slight stigma, I think, that a lot of kind of university-educated metropolitans feel about the military life, and that somewhat spills it into
feelings
about soldiers as well.
Yeah, I think they're often very... like, they often don't understand it, and so are therefore very wary of it and actually quite critical of it. I actually get very annoyed in London when talking to people about, like, the military and people who are in the military, because it just seems to come from ignorance and, like, an assumption. I think the Iraq war wasn't particularly good in painting our services in the best light.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think I've entirely answered your question, but I'm not in favour of compulsory military service. But I think there's definitely an argument that it should be advertised. It should be promoted more heavily as a legitimate alternative to university education.
I feel like it kind of is. Like, especially the UK Army has very, very good like marketing and stuff like that. I wanted to talk about one more thing. Which is the fact that when Macron talked about his compulsory, maybe it might not be compulsory, who knows, military service, he framed it as being part of France's efforts to prepare for an era of global turbulence.
Christ.
Do you think that there's any argument for that? Are we all fucked? I mean, I have been brushing up on my practical skills, like map reading and wood whittling as well. I've told you this, in the post-apocalyptic economy, my ability to edit video is not going to go very far.
I think in an apocalypse situation, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast previously, but what you want to do is die as quickly as possible, so you're not one of the ones left like fighting over... you know, the 2 square miles of scrubland that's still left. I think you want to be as near as possible to the center of any nuclear explosion, so you're wiped out as quickly as possible, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, great.
I mean, it
fuck the military. Let's just ensure that everybody dies in a nuclear explosion.
I'm just saying, you know, I think it's life is not necessarily going to be worth living in like a proper apocalyptic scenario. It's kind of a truism to say that the world is getting more dangerous. And if you read like certain thinkers around kind of nuclear weapons in general, there's definitely a school of thought that actually where closer to nuclear war than we ever have been, full stop. Even including very acute crises such as the Cuban Missile Crisis. But then, you know, I don't know that that's something that something like military service is necessarily going to solve, because ultimately nuclear weapons are a completely different ballgame. I don't know. I don't know if it does make much sense as part of a military strategy, and I think national service is never really intended as a military strategy, although it can potentially make up for sort of shortfalls in manpower. I think it's more to do with social cohesion, really.
I think it also may have something to do, especially Macron, like, because for the European Union, France and the UK have been the major military contributors and the major military like forces in NATO and stuff. And as the UK leaves the EU and NATO seems rather weak because, Trump... it makes sense for France to kind of redouble down on one of the roles that it has played as kind of like a large military power in the modern era.
Yeah, I think that does make sense. I think one of the main challenges that actually, or one of the main problems that the EU will have once Britain's left is actually deciding...
If it leaves,
that is an assumption. is what they'll do around things like defence and border control and security, which are all related.
Build a wall.
But I think it doesn't really make sense that it surely is not sustainable that a single country like France carries, you know, a majority or a huge lump of the effort. I mean, France will be the only nuclear power left in the EU if Britain leaves the EU. it surely has to be something that is collaborated on. I mean, the phrase EU army sends shudders down the spines of many like Europhobes, but
yeah, but an EU army makes fucking sense.
I think it does make sense. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be collaborating on things like currency, if you're going to have free movement of people, then surely having an, you know, a combined military operation is not that controversial.
Yeah, well, apparently it is, because heaven forbid. Shall we wrap up?
Yeah, I have nothing further to say.
Lovely, excellent.
Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to complain about your awful opinions?
At Jazza John, and equally you can do the same to Jimmy at JDE Nichols. Also, leave us a review on iTunes.
Has no one done that since August?
Like, no one has. No. I'm unconvinced that, and I think that people download this, download episodes, and then don't listen to them.
Don't
prove
listen
us
to them.
Wrong by tweeting us.
Interesting. Maybe people just don't leave reviews on iTunes anymore. Maybe that's not a thing.
Yeah, maybe it just isn't. Although podcasting is now seen as like a serious medium or something.
Hmm. They've obviously not been listening to us.
Whee!
Whee! All right, should we wrap up?
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.